From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Through April, News and Notes is bringing you Minding Your Money. It's a series highlighting the financial questions that matter to African Americans. We've already heard about what African Americans spend their money on and gotten some great tax tips just before the deadline. Today, money and relationships. Joining me are two experts on how couples can work together to manage household spending and plan for the future. One is Sharon Epperson, personal finance correspondent for CNBC and columnist for USA Weekend. She's author of The Big Payoff, 8 Steps Couples Can Take to Make the Most of Their Money and Live Richly Ever After. The other is Michelle Singletary, financial columnist for The Washington Post. She's written Your Money and Your Man, How You and Prince Charming Can Spend Well and Live Rich. Michelle, Sharon, great to have you on.
Great to be here. Same year.
So it's a lot of collective wisdom in your books. And I will say this. I have made some bad couples money decisions. I will leave the other perpetrator out of it. But I guess, Michelle, you go first. Does it take two people to mess up the money part of a relationship, or can one person just go off and do it by themselves?
No. I think it definitely takes two to have a lot of money issues. And a lot of times it's because you haven't talked to each other. You haven't set some money ground rules. I talk in the context of marriage. You know, people get married. They haven't talked about money. They haven't set up a budget. They haven't looked at their credit reports. They haven't done any of the due diligence that most people do before they buy a car.
Sharon, what do you think?
I think it's very important to communicate. It's very important to talk about what your goals are. What do you really need to have in your life, and what do you want to have in your life? And also to have in mind what the person that you're with, what their money history is. How did they grow up? How did their family talk about money, or did they not talk about money? That can also influence whether they spend a lot or save a lot or don't know a lot about money or know a lot about money.
All right. I'll just put it out there. I've never been married. And so for me to have messed up in a relationship, it was in a partnership that existed outside of marriage. And what do you think about that, Michelle?
Well, proactively stay in your own apartment. You stay in his, yours, and he stay in his. <That's>
Why do you say that?
You know, cohabitation is definitely on the rise in America. We see it as a normal way to couple. But I don't believe that it's normal between when you're talking about men and women. You ought to wait till you get married to be merging your money. When you're dating, what you should be trying to find out is, what is this person's money value? Sharon's absolutely right. The questions we ask when we're dating is not the questions that are going to lead to the right answers and the right relationship. Instead of asking, you know, what kind of job you do or what kind of money you make, why don't you ask, you know, do you tithe? Do you believe in giving back to the community? Do you save? What do you believe about debt or credit? You know, ask them, you know, what do you believe about tipping? You don't want to marry a miser. Those are the kinds of questions. I always tell women, ask the guy, if he had no money and all he had was his rent money and his mama called, would you give her your rent money? And if he says yes, kick him to the curb.
I remember dating someone when I was in graduate school. He was getting his MBA, and I thought, you know, on paper, this is going to look perfect.
That's right.
And it was Valentine's Day, and we were in Manhattan, and it was the end of the day, and I had no flowers. And he realized that I had no flowers on Valentine's Day and decided he was going to barter with someone selling flowers on the street, saying, you want $20 for the dozen roses? How about if I give you 15? And I'm standing right there. Now, those types of things can give you an idea about someone's attitude toward money. And Michelle mentioned definitely keeping your money separate when you're dating. I definitely believe that there's room to keep some money separate when you're married. When you're a couple, whether you are married or not married, yours, mine, ours. You need to have 3 pools of money.
Well, I totally disagree. I respect you, but I totally disagree. I think you ought to keep everything together. You come together. I mean, I always tell couples, are you going to keep the kids separate? And then if you're going to keep your money separate, so you're saying your money's more important than the children. I think you ought to bring everything together because it creates transparency. I've been married almost 16 years. We have everything joint. We talk about our money, but I did my due diligence. And I love that story about the corner because it depends on the person. I personally would have been, bargain them flowers down. You know, you spend too much money on Valentine's flowers anyway. So it depends on where you're coming from. I would have loved that scenario. I wouldn't have felt bad about it at all. But if that's something that is special to you, then you're right. You need to find someone who won't barter in your presence.
Well, Sharon, tell me more about the whole separation of money thing, because I know a lot of people who swear by that, you know, and having a little pool of your own.
I think it works very well, and I've been married not quite as long as Michelle, but I've been married over 10 years, and it does work for us very well. Again, it depends on your money history and your own, the way you handle money and the way your spouse handles money. Now, both of us have things that we like to do independently. We have savings that we have, and of course, those are often independent. If you have your 401k or your IRA, that's in your own name. And then we have things that we do together in terms of household budgeting that we do as a couple. And so that's what I'm talking about when it's yours, mine, and ours. Some couples also want to have their own fun money. So, you know, they don't have to tell a spouse if they're spending money on shoes, and the spouse doesn't have to, you know, the husband doesn't have to tell them if they want to go to, you know, a couple different sports games, or, you know, spend money with the guys or what have you, and the wife doesn't have to say when she goes to the spa. That can be something that where transparency is more important, especially when you're trying to budget and you really want to come up with a plan that so you don't overspend as a couple.
Well, let me throw out another scenario. I know someone who basically is on an allowance. His wife takes all of their money, puts it in a joint account, and gives him a chunk. And he can do whatever he wants with that chunk. He can scatter it on the sidewalk. He can, you know, buy a whole bunch of candy and give it out to kids on the street, whatever he wants. But the rest of it is like whatever he's earned is in the joint pool, including, you know, plus what she's earned. What do you think about a system like that?
I love that system. I think it says that all the money belongs to both of us. But I think it does say everything in this pot is ours. You know, here's the amount of money that you don't have to be accountable for. But when everything is together, it forces you to have conversations. You know, I help counsel couples through my church. And again, I find people who have these separate pots, there tends to be this tit for tat. I think there ends up being a lot of competition when you have the separate things. I've talked to couples who have separate accounts and they don't know what is in each other's retirement fund. There's no conversation about, you know, where we're going to go together. Clearly, there are people who have done it successfully. I personally, because I receive hundreds of letters from couples, you know, overwhelmingly, I find people who do keep separate pots, it's not working for them.
Now, I want to ask each of you about what if things have gone terribly wrong, because money is such a huge factor in so many divorces in America, and I'm sure in many other countries. So, Michelle first, and then Sharon. What if you've reached that precipice where someone's spending habits or earning habits or lack of earning habits have driven you to the point where you say it's over? How can you try to salvage that situation?
I would hope that you have seek counseling. I think many marriages, people sort of get to a breaking point and they haven't sought help. Oftentimes when you have a mediator in there, they can help sort of see the way and help you set some guidelines and some rules. In my book, I talk about some of the house rules that hopefully will keep you from that divorce path.
Sharon?
I definitely think that you should try to work it out as best you can. And if you can get someone to help you talk it through, then that's fine. But that is why I'm stressing so much that it's important for people to have their own money. This happens to women so often that they have not been in control of their finances, that they have not been paying attention to, women and men, that they have not been paying attention to where the money is going. And then the inevitable happens. Unfortunately, they have to get divorced. And they didn't realize that because they had this joint credit card, they're now responsible for this debt. I talked to a woman just this week that I interviewed who had gone through just this thing. She had no idea. She figured that her husband was always the one using this credit card. He's the one who had racked up all the debt, but her name was on it too. And she was saddled, because she was the person making the most money, she was saddled with having to pay off this debt. So the quote-unquote divorce settlement that she got really was to pay off all of his debts, because then he kind of abandoned the whole situation and she was left with all the debt. So it's very important that you have some money saved on your own, that you have a credit card in your own name, that you've established your own identity as well as your identity as a couple.
Sharon, your book specifically lists 8 steps for couples. And Michelle, obviously, your book is on a similar topic. But if you had to pick one piece of advice, and I know this is torture, what would be the one thing, Sharon first and then Michelle, that you would say you have to do to make your relationship not only financially successful, but perhaps emotionally fulfilling as well, so that you don't go crazy trying to be with someone and deal with the money part too? Sharon?
Well, one of the things I think for anyone, and this is a couple, this is a single person, what have you, you need to have a savings and particularly an emergency savings if something is to go wrong. And whether or not you decide as a couple to put this, to pool your money to do this, or whether you save a couple months worth of your salary on your own in another, in an account that you have. You need to have an emergency reserve. You never know what might happen, whether it's a medical emergency, whether you lose your job, whether something happens with the children, whether, like what happened to my home this week, your house gets flooded because of a storm that you didn't anticipate. Whatever it is, you need to have something saved to cover that. And when the unexpected happens, that's when a lot of these fights happen, particularly if you haven't been communicating about how you're going to allocate your money.
Michelle, what about you?
I think if you are talking about getting married, the number one thing you ought to do is to get premarital counseling and get into a program that has a strong financial component that would require you to share all three of your credit reports and all three of your credit scores so that you then can look at each other's credit history and it begins a conversation on how you're going to handle your money together, and hopefully will lead to you setting up a budget you will operate under once you get married. If you are already married and you didn't do that, start to establish some house rules, some hard and fast rules that you live by. For example, that neither of you are going to spend a certain amount of money without each of you agreeing, or neither of you can make a major purchase like a car without talking to each other and agreeing. It would take two yeses and one no. So in other words, you both have to say yes. And if one of you says no, it doesn't get bought.
Well, there's so much more to say, but we don't have time to say it. Sharon, Michelle, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
That was Sharon Epperson. She's CNBC's personal finance correspondent and author of the book, The Big Payoff, 8 Steps Couples Can Take to Make the Most of Their Money and Live Richly Ever After. And Michelle Singletary, financial columnist for The Washington Post and author of the book, Your Money and Your Man, How You and Prince Charming Can Spend Well and Live Rich. We spoke about managing money in relationships, and for more help on how to navigate the money in your relationship, go to npr.org/newsandnotes. News and Notes series on personal finance, Minding Your Money, will continue through the month.